T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Small Talk, a show about small business for small business. Here's your host, Mark S. Lee.
Good morning and welcome to Small Talk with Mark S. Lee, brought to you by Domino's. As you know, this is your source for entrepreneurship and small business development across the great city of Detroit, the state of Michigan, as well as across the country, because the show is streamed nationally via radio.com. And we do have people contacting me from all over the place. Doug, good morning.
Morning. You thought out yet?
No. No.
Okay.
No.
Just checking.
I mean, this past week, I know this is Super Bowl. And by the way, happy Super Bowl.
That's Sunday. Right. That's right.
But this past week, man, I have never experienced anything like that. Have you?
It was nuts. I can't remember it being this cold for this long, you know, for that long. It was nuts.
You know, I was thinking, you know, for our listeners across the country, you know, Detroit and Michigan and 75% of the country has been under this, what was it called, polar vortex?
Polar vortex.
Yeah, and so I was just stunned in terms of just how cold it was. But yeah. I was thinking, real quick before we jump into the show, when I was growing up in Detroit, and I remember in high school, and we got probably 15 or 16 inches of snow.
Right.
But up until that point, we still went to school.
Right.
Now, they're canceling school before the snow hits the ground.
Exactly.
And I understand we live in a very litigious society and people are concerned about safety, but times have changed.
They sure have.
Well, we want you all, you know, sit back. We know the weekend is here now. The temperature is warmed up. We're all thawing out. So we hope you survived this past week. And just sit back and relax with a nice what, Doak?
Hot cup of coffee.
Hot cup of coffee, as I always like to say. And join us in a very special guest, Ms. Michelle Sori Robinson. And she's the president and CEO of MMSDC. That's the Michigan Minority Supplier Diversity Council.
Development Council.
Thank you for correcting me. I was very close. And she's a wonderful individual. Has been in the Motor City for a couple of years now. Is that right?
4 years.
No.
This month.
Has it been 4 years?
It's been 4 years.
Because you came up here from Atlanta.
I did.
So I know this weather just shook you to the core.
The polar vortex in Atlanta. Remember, we shut down with 1 or 2 inches of snow.
I know that's right.
So the polar vortex has been a new experience.
And the Super Bowl is being held in Atlanta later today.
It is.
Yeah, so. Okay. All right. Well, thanks for coming in. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having
me. Absolutely. My pleasure. We wanted to have you come in because a press release came across my desk not too long ago regarding the new governor. And as you know, this show is focused on entrepreneurship. And she recently signed an executive order that's focused on helping minority businesses, entrepreneurs in the big cities and cities across the state of Michigan and in underserved areas.
Right.
Yeah. Talk to us about that executive order and what it means to those wanting to do business in the state of Michigan.
You know, I think what it means, it's an exciting new day when the chief executive in your state says, I believe all business is important and I believe everyone has to be included in that. So if you look at what Governor Whitmer has done with this new executive directive, is she has simply said, in our state contracting, we're going to be inclusive. And that means everyone. That means people in Flint, that means people in Detroit, that means people in Grand Rapids, wherever you are, we want to be inclusive. And in particular, we want to look at disadvantaged businesses, those businesses that historically might not have had the same opportunities and access to capital, access to contracts as other businesses. So that's an exciting day. I was really, really pleased, I have to tell you, Mark, that literally on her third day in office, she did this.
Yeah.
So it also, for me, underscores the importance and significance of her being this bridge builder that we heard throughout the campaign, in that she would literally, on the first Friday of her time in office, call us and have us there to witness her sign this directive. So
that's incredible. So and this is not a set-aside program either.
Absolutely not.
So let's just be honest. You and I were talking before the show today how straightforward we both really are.
Right,
and we're
right.
very direct here, so I'm going to be very direct. This is not a set-aside program. We're putting X percent of dollars for minority businesses.
Absolutely not. This simply gives those businesses the opportunity to compete. And in Michigan, because of Prop 2, we really don't even focus on gender and race. What I'm simply, and what others have challenged the governor and what she heard throughout the campaign trail, was when you start to look and you see that all of your contractors are the same race, in the same groups, of this, in the same geographic area, perhaps there is some unfairness. Mm-hmm. And for her, that more importantly than race and gender says that we have an imbalance. Mm-hmm. So how do we simply make sure everyone has an opportunity? They're going to compete like everyone else. They're going to have to bring great products, great services, great value, great innovation, just like everyone else. But this simply is ensuring that they have an opportunity to get in the door.
And let me reemphasize what she just said. That's a great comment that Michelle Sori Robinson just referenced here. You have to provide high quality services. You have to have a business plan. You have to be able to demonstrate a level of success. Just don't expect to get the business or the business opportunity. What the governor is doing, and Michelle through the organization, is they're providing opportunities for you to certainly get a piece of that pie in terms of getting exposure to different businesses.
Right.
It doesn't mean they're giving you anything.
Right.
You have to still go out and get it.
No handouts.
No handouts here.
Right.
And I talked to Michelle, a lot of people who, excuse me, were always asking me for my advice on you know, what are some tips that you can give me, Mark,
right,
to help me get those types of programs, get engaged in those programs. So talk to them one more time about some of the tips, some of the things that you're looking for as they're looking to do business with you and looking to do business with the state of Michigan, mm-hmm, the state of Detroit. What are some of the advice and counsel you can
right
share with them?
You know, and I think your point is a very good one. You always have to be prepared. I am sometimes more blunt than people would like when I tell entrepreneurs you cannot approach and not be fully prepared. You have to be over-prepared, in fact, in today's climate, because most companies, most government agencies, whether they're federal or state agencies, they all want to do more with less. That means they want to have fewer suppliers who can take on more responsibility. And for us, that means we have to do a much better job of developing businesses. My focus is minority businesses, mm-hmm, because when you look in a state like Michigan, the opportunities that have been here for minority businesses that literally started with a few $100 and a dream. But their dream was to be the top and most competitive in whatever field or arena they were in. You now have multi-billion dollar minority businesses based right here in the state of Michigan, billion with a B. But that comes from really studying and knowing the industry, knowing what it takes to actually be competitive within that industry, whether it's a product or a service, and then really availing yourself of, in whether you look at private targets like major corporations, availing yourself of the knowledge that comes through a council like ours, through your chambers of commerce that are in connection with those. So whether you want to do business with Ford Motor Company, Herman Miller, Kellogg's, those are all companies that are members. And they tell us quite frequently, these are the things we're looking for in our suppliers. These are the minimum standards. So one of my first things for businesses is study, do your homework, and know who your targets are. Everyone's not your target.
Yep,
just because
exactly
they can pay an invoice, they're not your target. So really study that industry that you're in, know where your niche is, and then go and identify who your primary targets are.
And don't try to be all things to all people.
You can't.
You can't. I mean, you know, it's kind of like we got this whole pie. They got the, mm-hmm, apple pie. At times, we want to eat that whole apple pie.
It's true.
But, you know, if you think about it, we don't eat the whole apple pie at one time. We eat slices of it. We cut a slice of the pie. And you might go back a couple hours later, a couple,
right,
days later, have another slice of the pie.
Right.
And as we talk about from a business standpoint, Michelle makes an excellent point. Identify that target and identify what your niche is going to be, you know, and become the best at it.
The absolute best at it.
Become the absolute best at it. Which leads me to my next question is, as we talk about minority businesses, from your perspective, what is the current state of minority businesses in Detroit as, mm-hmm, well as across the state of Michigan?
Hmm. I think this is a time wrought with opportunity. Sure, there are a lot of challenges. I mean, when you just pick up the newspaper every day, and, well, my generation picks up the newspaper.
We're the same one. I got a Sunday paper right
others
now.
Others pick up their phone and get Google alerts. But at the end of the day, what I see is a lot of opportunity because smaller businesses are typically more nimble. Minority businesses, whether they're small or large, are typically quite flexible and creative and innovative. And that's what this market is going to require. When we started more than a year ago, we created what we call the Meet the Candidate series at the council. And that's in fact where we met then candidate Whitmer. And we invited a bipartisan group of people running for office, both at the federal level, nationally, and also those here within the state. And what we wanted to talk about is what's necessary to drive this economy forward, and how will you help the business owners in this room, in particular, and all of those forums throughout the state, prepare for that. The conversations, quite honestly, were full of the challenges that a business owner and entrepreneur is going to face every day, but the underwriting kind of current and tenet was there's a lot of opportunity. And in the past, we've used economic downturns in Michigan to grow some of our best and strongest minority businesses.
You know, and as we talk about growing these minority businesses, one of the challenges always has been, continues to be, access to capital, right? And so from your standpoint, we're talking to Michelle Sori Robinson. She's the president and CEO of the MMSDC here in Detroit. What advice would you give to those individuals? Let's say, for example, because you made a good comment later this year, and we were chatting about this before the show started today, there might be some economic challenges. There's a there's an expectation in 2019 that the economy may slow down or slowly turn. So I've been listening this morning, and you know, I have decent financial strength. However, I might need to continue to focus on growing my business by getting additional access to capital.
Right.
What do you tell that person?
What I tell that person is we will likely have a softening of the economy. Most economists are telling us that. And that means now, prior to that downturn, you prepare. And I think you do that in a number of ways. First of all, I think you have to have a very honest assessment of where you are financially and what it's going to take for you to grow or to at least maintain during the downturn. And what I advise people is we have many traditional banks who are members of our council. I won't begin to name names because I'd forget some of them, but there are traditional banks that have programs that are focused on small businesses, that are focused on women-owned and minority-owned businesses. Certainly become a part of the chamber, become a part of a council like ours, and learn who those are. But in addition, I think we often overlook private investment. And whether it's through a venture capitalist, whether it's looking at, there are some major bankers that are out there now with programs where they have funds that are truly geared toward identifying those people that are hiring people in disadvantaged communities. And that's where I would say you have to begin to look and say, what type of capital do I need? How much do I need? The timing of that so that you're prepared well before the downturn, because if you wait until then, it's far too late.
So it's not just looking at, in a closing minute or so together, it's not just looking at traditional financing.
Oh, absolutely.
There's a lot
not.
Of money out there.
There's a lot of money out there. I tell people often, there is so much money out there. I am contacted at least every month by someone wanting to identify businesses that need funding sources.
You know, I got one quick question before we break is the contractors, very quickly, like all that development taking place downtown. So we had a lot of discussion about minority contractors partnering with majority-owned. What are your thoughts
exactly.
about that?
As long as it's not a sham or pass-through, I certainly embrace it. And for me, a sham or a pass-through doesn't allow true wealth transfer. So if one partner is making $50 million and the minority makes $1 million, sure, I'm excited that I have a minority that's become a millionaire, but that's not equitable. The other thing is knowledge transfer. So if there is a strong joint venture, there's also a transfer of knowledge that ensures that that minority business can someday be the prime contractor.
Gotcha. What's the website? People get more information, including a major event you have coming up in May. What's the website?
We do. We have a major event coming up May 7th through the 9th at Cobo Center, 3,000 attendees. Our website is minoritysupplier.org. You can find out more information about our programs, events, and services.
Ms. Sori, Michelle Sori Robinson, outstanding. You're very good. I really appreciate talking to you, giving the insights this morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Stay warm, although the weather's warmer this weekend.
It is.
All right. Well, be more guests at this commercial break on Small Talk with Mark Esley, brought to you by Domino's on this Super Bowl Sunday. Good morning. Welcome back to Small Talk with Mark Esley, brought to you by Domino's. Yes, Doak, I know, as we referenced in the opening comments today, this past week was kind of bitter, but it's feeling a little bit better today on this Super Bowl Sunday. Huh?
I'll take it. I'll take it much better than Wednesday and Thursday.
Oh, my goodness. We started with that snow way back on, I guess, Sunday or Monday. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Well, anyway, we're so glad you're all joining us and continuing the conversation with a wonderful next guest of ours, Ms. Mary Treater Lang, and she's a CPA, and she's also on the Board of Regents for Eastern Michigan University, my alma mater. And as you all know, I'm an adjunct there at the university as well. But we're going to focus on really talk about accounting and supporting your business as we are here in the tax season. Mary Treater Lang, good morning, and thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Mark. I am just delighted to be on.
Well, so glad to have you. And are you going to sit back and enjoy the big game later today with the family, by the way?
Oh, I sure am. Family and friends. It's always a tradition. It's a wonderful time.
And we're still waiting for the Lions to get there, aren't we?
War. Yes, all right. We are.
All right. Anyway, here we are, Mary, and you have a wonderful, extensive background. I know you're highly creative and results-oriented executive, and you're a CPA, and you have your certificate, and you're doing some wonderful things here in Metro Detroit and beyond. Just give us a very brief overview of your background and the types of work that you focus on before we unpack the conversation further.
Well, wonderful. Fresh out of college at the University of Dayton, dual degree in accounting and marketing, I pursued my CPA, and that's a license, sit down and take an exam, just like a bar exam, and received my CPA certificate while working at KPMG, which is at that time one of the big accounting firms, and still is, or one of the big four at this time. But I pursued that, and I became in that industry noted as a computer expert, and mm-hmm. I first moved from there over to Ameritech and went into the security industry and did a lot with computer security, integrated security, and ran many divisions, both in a sales as well as an operations side of the house. And then the latter part of my career, I went into the public industry, and I was vice president of development programs over at Vista Maria and a nonprofit helping the vulnerable at-risk youth here in the Metro Detroit area.
Outstanding, outstanding. And excuse me, here we are in the tax season. And as you know, this show is focused on entrepreneurship and small business development, and we like to provide advice and counsel to those listening. And, you know, here we are at the beginning of February, essentially, and we know taxes will be due in a couple of months. Talk about the importance of entrepreneurs and as it relates to having a tax plan and maybe having a CPA or someone that they're working with to help navigate the system out there, the many changes taking place in the tax code and helping them support their business.
Oh, thank you for this opportunity.
Sure.
Yes, you know, every business, no matter how small you are, you need a financial and tax advisor. But your business really needs a CPA, not just an accountant. There's two differences. You know, an accountant and a CPA are different. And a CPA, as I just indicated, goes through a licensure process through the state, and they have to keep up with tax laws in order to maintain their license, such as myself, and that's what I do to stay on top of it. And that CPA can not only help you from a tax standpoint, it also can help you from a bookkeeping. It can be an accountant. It can be a controller. It's one who is saving and looking out for the better interest of you, saving dollars down the road, being more of a financial, I guess what we're really referred to as CPAs, is a trusted financial advisor.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we help you in taxes or your business and your goals and reaching them, it's critical to have a CPA on board to guide you and make those profitable business decisions throughout your existence as an entrepreneur. And that's how we start our business and keep keep moving you along.
So you made an interesting comment. You said, a trusted financial advisor. What is the difference between, for example, a CPA as a trusted financial advisor, and let's just say a financial advisor from one of the major financial institutions, across the region, Merrill Lynch or other organizations, for example?
Yes, and I know the CPA industry inside and out, and we're quite often referred to as a trusted financial advisor, and part of that is our ethics and our code of ethics that is associated with it, the degree of confidentiality. Nothing that comes in through us is ever spilled out, whether it be in public or competition or any way, shape, or form, because it's part of our license process. And we, in order to keep our license current, we take a series of hours that are associated with continuing education on the ethics side of the house. And it's important that we continue and stay apprised of that. But that's the trusted end of it. That goes into that CPA will not be spilled out in any way, shape, or form to affect you from a competitive standpoint or a personal standpoint.
Interesting. And as we talk about the... Again, beginning of tax season, so people, we know that the partial shutdown is over, and I know the IRS is now taking tax returns as of this past week and things like that. Talk to those listening about what they should be doing. They have a couple of months, 2.5 months, to certainly get their taxes in order and get ready for this upcoming year beyond the tax season. What are maybe 3 or 4 tips or 2 or 3 major tips you would give to those listening this morning about, getting ready to do their taxes as well?
Well, I would imagine that most of the small business owners have a bookkeeper or something along those lines handling the data entry information. So it's important to compile the monthly results in preparation for the CPA, compile any documents that are associated with any expenditures that you have incurred, and really to seek out to the CPA early, not wait till the last minute, to see if there's anything else that you may need to compile, whether it's large purchases of business equipment, vehicles, or anything along those lines, but also to ensure that you're filing all the necessary payroll taxes and everything like that by the deadlines. Because the last thing in the world we want as a small business owner is to have any penalties or interest associated with something that you're not adhering to in requirements for a filing deadline.
Okay. We're talking to Mary Treater Lang this morning, and she is a CPA. Excuse me. I'll give you some great advice as she's calling in on this Super Bowl Sunday, and we're having a nice cup of coffee together over the phone, and she's giving you some great advice. Here we are in early February, and we know that the tax season's upon us. And as an entrepreneur, as a small business owner, some of you are thinking, well, I've been doing my taxes by myself for all these years, and I just don't, I'm not comfortable with somebody else, doing my taxes, or I don't have that type of revenue structure or revenue stream to help me do those taxes. What do you tell that person, Mary?
Well, I'll tell you right now, I think anyone that's starting out a business, I mentioned a bookkeeper level. Some of the people that will pull together the necessary documents for your tax filing is not someone that you have to pay a high dollar volume for. A bookkeeper doing the data entry, an accountant just overseeing your monthly entries or your financial reports. But I think it's very worthwhile, at least the first time around, to get your toe wet, to hire a CPA and find out what really is required, as I indicated, from a tax filing standpoint, as well as getting and seeking that advice that can make you profitable, not only as you wrap up the current year, but also focused on the new year, making sure that you can reach your goals and, create that revenue cycle that's important to keep you in existence and allow that at CPA to learn and grow with your experiences. It'll be very valuable.
And let me ask you, you worked at several different opportunities throughout the course of your career, and now you've been an entrepreneur. Talk to us about your transition from the more public space, I guess, into more of the entrepreneurial space. How has that been for you personally?
Well, I kind of gave a broad-based interview background on my background running various divisions and sales and working with CPA firms both in the big sector as well as the medium sector. I was over at Baker Tilly. But you take all this valuable information, and now I'm able to assist and help entrepreneurs. I'm able to mentor those individuals that are accounting majors in higher education institutions and secure them along in their job. I sit on the Michigan Association of CPAs Presidential Advisory Board. I'm proud to be a member of that. And it's delightful to be able to encourage individuals to go into the profession, because CPAs, they say it's going to be, there's going to be a big rush for the baby boomers, mm-hmm. and there's going to be a shortage of CPAs. So it's important that I encourage that. And as I'm out creating business development and advising entrepreneurs both in the business sector from a financial standpoint as well as marketing, I'm utilizing the skills as a CPA with that business mindset across the board. And I can be helpful in any way to help those listeners, too, if they would like any help or guidance, too.
You know, I have you on the phone, and I would be remiss if I didn't ask you briefly about Eastern Michigan University. You are on the Board of Regents there, and you know, you and I have had a relationship in terms of the relationship between the Eastern Michigan connection there over the last couple of years. Just talk to very briefly about to our listeners in a couple of minutes that we have about your role as a board member, and what's your role as a Board of Regents at Eastern Michigan University. Like, exactly what does that mean?
Well, thank you for giving me that opportunity. And I was appointed by Governor Schneider 6 years ago to be on the Board of Regents for EMU. It's an 8-year term. And when I was appointed, I was asked to be on the board predominantly because of my CPA credentials and being able to bring the financial and business advice to the board and to the university. One of the roles as a region, or the predominant, the main reason that we're put there is to hire and fire a president. I think we've seen it with a respective university here in our state, MSU. Mm-hmm. But that's the sole reason of the regions. But we're also from the financial stability and ensuring the continuation and educating the youth at the lowest cost possible out of their pocket.
Yeah, and as we know that the state of Michigan, you and I had a brief conversation last week, and we were just talking about the cost of when I was a student compared to the cost, and I'm talking about all universities, certainly have increased certainly over the last, I've been out of college for a long time, so, but we were talking about state funding and things like that, but I'm sure that in your role as a board of regent for Eastern Michigan University, those are types of issues that you kind of address on an ongoing basis as well, on behalf of the students as well as other constituencies that we may have.
Oh, definitely, on an ongoing basis. And I think we know, and it's not, no hidden factor, is that over the course of the years here in the state of Michigan, the money that's being provided by the state of Michigan to the respective universities throughout the state have substantially reduced. And it has not gone up in any way, shape, or form, just as the K through 12 as well.
You got it. And Mary, I just want to ask you in closing, do you have a website, or how can people get in touch with you as well?
Well, it's pretty simple. I would refer through Gmail, and that's marytreederlang@gmail.com. And Treeder Lang is TREEDERLANG. @gmail.com.
Well, Mary Treeder Lang, we want to thank you very much for calling in this morning and providing some excellent advice to entrepreneurs and those listening as the tax season is upon us. We want to wish you much continued success. Sit back and stay warm. Continue to stay warm all through the weekend. This weather has broken finally this weekend, and enjoy the big game later today as well.
I sure will, and you as well.
Thank you
very much.
My pleasure. That's Ms. Mary Treeder Lang. There'll be more guests after this commercial break on Small Talk with Mark Esley, brought to you by Domino's. Good morning. Welcome back to Small Talk with Mark Esley, brought to you by Domino's. Yes, Domino's. Speaking of Domino's, Doki Doe, before I give the shout-outs, it is Super Bowl Sunday.
Yep.
And we had a guest on last week from Domino's. He talked about it's kind of like their Christmas.
Yeah, it is. It's got to be nuts today.
Well, he said, 4:30-ish? They said 2 hours before.
Yep.
They get really busy. So if you're thinking about ordering at Domino's, you better do it relatively early.
Exactly.
All right. We want you to sit back and relax and enjoy that nice hot cup of coffee as we continue to thaw out from the polar vortex from this past week on this weekend morning. And I, at this point in the show, I'd give my shout-outs to AM 1270 for giving me this forum each and every single week to have a conversation with you here in the Motor City. You might be sitting back and reading your free press or your mobile technology, or you might be listening across the country across our many .coms, radio.com, wwjnewsradio.com, EliteGroupInnovation.com, SoundCloud.com, or TheHubDetroit.com. Just sit back and relax and enjoy that nice hot cup of coffee if you're reading your local newspaper and your mobile technology with our very next special guest, Ms. Jessica Robinson. And she's the Executive Director of the Michigan Mobility Institute, where she works to accelerate the development of talent for the growing mobility industry as we're seeing it continues to grow here across the Motor City as well as across the country. Jessica, good morning. Thanks for joining me.
It's great to be here, Mark. Thank you.
Good to see you.
Thanks. Likewise. It's been a while.
It's been a while. So maybe the Mackinac Policy Conference?
That's right. That's where we first ran into each other. And that was actually at the start, back at the very beginning of all of this.
You know, so the funny thing about it, we were actually standing in line, I think, at the cookout or whatever they have that opening night.
That's right. Yeah. It's funny how things work here in Michigan. Seems like sometimes it's a small world.
It is a small world. And from my standpoint, as we talk about a small world, give us just a very brief overview. You're not from Detroit.
I am not.
And so let's kind of start with that path there, your brief overview. Then we'll kind of unpack the mobility story for you. But talk to us. Who are you?
Absolutely. So as many transplants, the Midwest was probably one of the last places I ever thought I'd be, honestly. I grew up on the East Coast, worked on the West Coast. But work actually brought me here, and it was the people and the business community that ultimately convinced me that I had to stay. Mm-hmm. So about 5 years ago, I came here with a company called Zipcar, which is in mobility, focused on car sharing. And I had seen in the news and a lot of the local investment that was happening in the city and said, well, we need to go take a look at what's happening here to see if this is an opportunity for the business to expand. So we came. We took a tour. We met lots of folks in the city, universities, and others, and they said this is absolutely the time for a service like this. So we ultimately did launch the business, and along with it, I decided to move here. I remember distinctly the day that I called our vice president and said, "Hey, don't you need your market growth manager to live in a growth market?" And he said, "Yeah, actually, that makes sense, Jessica." And I said, "I think that should be Detroit." And there was silence on the other end of the line. But ultimately, he came to see it, and I was really thrilled. So I've been here about 5 years now.
And you came here. You really adopted this city.
I have. And it's funny, given the recent polar vortex, because the last time we had one is when I moved here. I distinctly remember picking up my keys during a thunder snow.
Oh, man.
And so if there's anyone crazy for the city, that would be me. But the business community has really opened up its arms to me, and I feel very lucky in the sense that that happened, and then have since tried to find ways as much as I can to give back to those, because I wouldn't be here today without people doing the same for me.
And now it was just recently announced that you became the executive director of the Michigan Mobility Institute. That's a great name. That's an impressive name. Exactly what is it, and what is its primary mission?
Yeah, so it is a mouthful, but the mission is actually very simple. As you think about the need for talent in our changing industry, as companies shift from being auto manufacturers and designers, we're going to need new people, more people, and people with different skills to do that work. And so that's what we're focused on. Very simply, it's a new form of training for the future industries within mobility.
And it's been a lot of talk and discussion about the autonomous vehicles and the mobility industry here in Detroit. The auto show certainly just ended last weekend, mm-hmm. and certainly for the very last time, being held in January. It's now moving into June, beginning in 2020. What connection did you see between the automotive industry, where you spent a past life as well, and what you're doing today? Is there a very strong connection there, or is it kind of like things that kind of disaggregate people going down their own paths right now?
There is definitely a connection, and I think that is part of what makes Michigan such a great place for future businesses, but particularly those thinking about mobility, is we have that legacy of manufacturing and design here. which is a great base to start from. And so where we see this going is we need to retain those skills and that ability and that whole supply chain, mm-hmm. but we need to now add on that new technology, whether it's self-driving, whether it's software, but it's also new business models too. And so, you know, companies that I've worked with and been a part of have also been leading change in that area. It's not just about selling a vehicle anymore. Mm-hmm. It's about so much more, whether it's ride sharing or, you know, other ways of getting around.
And you talk about recrafting and retraining talent or mm-hmm. building the mobility talent infrastructure. Again, it's kind of a mouthful. So when we say building that mobility talent infrastructure, exactly mm-hmm. what does that mean?
Yep. So we start with what we have working for us in the region. We have great community colleges, technical colleges, and universities. But the infrastructure piece is making sure that those programs, as well as new programs that we might offer at the Michigan Mobility Institute, really connect together. So you can actually envision a pipeline or pieces working together. The state has made so many investments in our youth in terms of sciences and in math training. But where do they go when they graduate from high school? And how do we start to put all of those pieces together? So that's thing one, is making sure it's all connected. Mm-hmm. And then the other piece that's important with infrastructure is making sure that it's strong enough or robust enough for the future. And we know through work that we've done since I first met you, that there are just not enough people entering yeah. these businesses today. And so that's the work where we're really starting
to begin. The challenge, Jessica, that I see. I mean, Detroit has been such a traditional manufacturing center for so long. Mm-hmm. If there's one gap, as you know, and we've chatted about this before, if there's one gap, it's certainly we got that manufacturing skill set from back in the day, and the future of the industry continues to change. Mm-hmm. How do you start to change that mindset and change that skill set for those who are trained for the old manufacturing sector as we transition to the mobility sector?
Yeah. So I'm going to start with mindset, because it's something, not being from the region, I didn't fully appreciate until I was part of the community. Mm-hmm. And that is, of course, we have Motor City Pride, and everyone can tell you a story about their granddad, or even your mom working in the line. But we also have the history of the boom and bust of the industry. And so what we've also heard from parents with kids today is they're telling them, well, maybe look at a different industry, mm-hmm. or maybe take a job outside of Michigan. And I had no idea that that was part of the perception here, because I only knew, you know, from my personal point in time forward. And so I think that's one, is for those that have been here for some time now, remembering that the industry is changing. And so that boom and bust will probably still exist, but it will shift. And if we move in the higher value business, which is in the technology side, those potentially are better insulated from those fluctuations in the future. And then when you think about the skills that will be needed in the future versus today, a great example is you know, many folks may have gone to school for a mechanical or electrical engineering degree. And those are important baselines to start from. But what we're hearing from business leaders is that they need those engineers to also understand computer programming right. and data security and how all of the systems piece together. And we can no longer be in these silos of expertise, that the pieces all have to work together.
We are talking to Jessica Robinson, and she is the executive director of the Michigan Mobility Institute. And we're really having a great conversation talking about mobility and how our industry and our city continues to change. And she's really focusing in on what that means and building the mobility talent infrastructure that's required as we think about Detroit's future, as we think about economic development opportunities and job opportunities. You know, I'm a native. I mean, mm-hmm. you and I chatted. I've lived in 8 different cities across the country as mm-hmm. well, and I've lived in some of the highly dynamic, high-tech areas in this country as well, more the more traditional. And that is my biggest challenge. I remember growing up here, I've shared this story many times before, my brothers worked in the plants, mm-hmm. and I didn't. I worked in a plant, but I worked as a tour guide for Ford. And I used to give tours. I used to give tours. I used to give tours of the old Rouge plant, which is still over there. But my brothers actually worked in the plant.
Said,
the
funny, just wave as you go by.
You know, the funny part of the story, my parents used to say, well, you know, you need to get a job. I said, I know. I said, college dope. And they said, we want you to get a job in the plant. I said, oh, really? So I got a job in the plant as a tour guide. Best job I ever had in college. But as we went up and down the line in those days, and as I think about, that was back in the late 70s, 1980-ish, now I think ahead to 2019, you look at how robotics have really taken over in the plants. I remember all those jobs were certainly handled by humans, and now a lot of those jobs are being have been replaced by technology. Mm-hmm. But with that said, you know, there are hundreds of thousands of jobs out there. I don't know the specific number, that if people retrain themselves in this mobility space, they can make a nice living, earn a good income, but it requires some self-investment as well.
Absolutely. Self-investment, and then also from the employers, you know, whether it's one of the manufacturers or someone in the supply chain. And you know, you're absolutely right. Walking down the line, it is a technology showcase in terms of the tools that people are using today. And, you know, it's also brought, I think, safety into the plant from some of those repetitive injuries. And, you know, whether it's there or out on the roads, you know, another concern is the loss of jobs for drivers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, whether it's delivery people, taxi cab drivers or others, those jobs will change. But in the research that we did with BCG, which ultimately validated for us the need for the Institute, we actually found that there will be between professional and then skilled trades, 175,000 new jobs that new mobility will create in the U.S. in the next 10 years. Mm. So, some will be losing the jobs that they do today, but with the right skills, training, and access, we believe that they can actually move into potentially better paying jobs.
Well, in our closing minute or so together, another thing that really caught my attention with you, you're an active startup mentor and micro lender who invest in women entrepreneurs and business owners in Detroit. Talk to us briefly about that.
I do. One of the things that I love about my job is I get to meet folks on the leading edge of mobility technology. But we have many other entrepreneurs in Detroit that are working in other areas too, you know, whether it's salons, staffing companies, and they need support and access to mentorship too. So I'm really thrilled to be able to invest in other women who are trying to stand their businesses up.
Absolutely. And how can people get more information about the Michigan Mobility Institute?
Yep. So we're the first initiative of the Detroit Mobility Lab. So you can go to DetroitMobilityLab.org. We're there, and you can also follow us on LinkedIn.
Well, I'm so glad that you're a Detroiter now.
Excellent. I am too. Thank you.
You came here from Boston, right?
Massachusetts, West Coast, now right. Midwest for life.
All right. Yep. Today's the Super Bowl. Who are you taking? Let's hear it. Come on.
You know, after Deflategate, I have shift alliances, so I'm rooting for the Lions for next season.
Okay, but what about for this year? You got the Rams?
I'm not going there.
All right.
I don't think Brady has any more fingers to put those rings on.
All right. Well, Jessica Robinson, thank you very much. We wish you much continued success.
Thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure.
Absolutely. My pleasure. There'll be more guests at this commercial break on Small Talk with Mark Esley on this Super Bowl Sunday, brought to you by Domino's. Good morning. Welcome back to Small Talk with Mark Esley, brought to you by Domino's on this Super Bowl Sunday. Yes, Doug, who are you taking, the Patriots or the Rams, by the way?
Hard to go against Brady.
Yeah?
It is, you know. I know you're a Michigan man, so, you know, I got to. But it should be a good game.
Yeah.
I'm still kind of upset with the way the other game ended with the Rams and Saints. So
they got
kind of tainted the whole game.
It does. They got to have an instant replay or something.
Yep.
All right. We're going to continue the conversation with a wonderful young man from the Motor City area, Mr. Tyrek Salmachi. And he is a realtor here in Detroit. He's a former boxer. He's doing some great things. Tyrek, good morning. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, good morning, Mark. How's everything going, brother?
Everything's going well, my man. So good to see you and hear your voice again.
Yeah, I'm glad. Thank you for inviting me, man. I'm glad to be on the show.
Absolutely.
Looking forward to it.
You know, speaking of boxing, before I forget, this past Wednesday, Doug, I was a celebrity bartender at Thomas McGee's this past Wednesday night. It was frigid. It was cold, but yeah. I somehow managed to stay warm.
And you didn't get hurt either.
I didn't get hurt.
I heard about that. How did it go?
It was great. All the funds being raised for Detroit's Golden Glovers. And I wanted to mention that because you're formerly, before we get into your current life, you were a boxer. Is that right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. All my life. Most of my life, I should say. I heard a few of my fellow boxes were at that charity event.
Yeah.
Or that fundraiser event last night. Mel McCrory.
There were some other boxes there. And, you know, and yes, it was a nice turnout despite the cold weather. It's always for a good cause. And we appreciate supporting Eric Olson and his team down there as well. Awesome. So briefly, how many years were you a boxer, Tyrick?
Well, I fought amateur for 12 years, professional for another 13 years. So I started my boxing career at 8 years old. And I had a long amateur career with with the Kronk gym, Emmanuel Stewart. Worked with Emmanuel for a while. He trained me. I worked with Jackie Callen as a professional. So I had a long amateur career at the Kronk gym in Detroit, which is, people who don't know, it's a world-renowned boxing gym, probably the most famous boxing gym in the world. And there I had about 148 amateur fights accumulated as an amateur. I was winning like national titles, national championships. I was a finalist in the Olympic trials and before turning professional with Jackie Callen, who managed me for a while.
Yeah.
And then I ended up working with Emmanuel again as a trainer. So I was rated a top 10 as a professional by WBC, WBO. And I also did a reality TV show called The Contender. It was on NBC back in 2006. And since then, been retired and moved on to the real estate world.
And you did, before you went to the real estate world, and you also were in a couple of movies. Weren't you one in with Sylvester Stallone or someone like that?
Well, Stallone was part of The Contender,
which was the boxer.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
It took 16 fighters to house this, and you know, they did a more of a drama of our lives and our families. DreamWorks was involved, Steven Spielberg. Mm-hmm. He had, Stallone was on set with us daily. Sugar Ray Leonard was part of it with us. So, it was a great overall.
Doug, I think you've heard a couple of those boxers, huh?
Yeah, a couple.
All right. But then you segued into the real estate industry. You have your partner. And your own real estate firms. Let's talk about the transition from being a professional athlete into becoming an entrepreneur. What was your thought process behind that? Why'd you do it?
You know, I always wanted something to fall back on after my professional career, my boxing career, because I've seen athletes from all these other sports, all these professional athletes, many of them not able to transition, especially boxing. A lot of the boxers, don't have an education, unfortunately. And after boxing, they have absolutely nothing to fall back on, end up broke. And we see that with football players, et cetera. And I don't want to be another statistics with that. And I knew that from a very young age. And, to stay in school, and, school's important. Having education is important.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you what, Muhammad Ali, who I had the honor of meeting when I was 11 years old, I'm sorry. And he was in town for an event, and I walked up to Ali, and I had a letter that I had wrote him, because he was such a huge inspiration to me in my boxing career, and loved him growing up. I got a chance to meet him, and I gave him the letter. He took the letter, and as I walked away, he goes, "Kid, he was here for a second." I came, and he grabbed me by the back of the head, and he put me real close to his, whispered in my ear. He said, "Listen, kid," he goes, "you want to succeed? Stay in school, stay away from drugs, listen to your parents." And he walked away, and I was like, that stuck with me. And then to make things even better, the next day, this is back in the early 80s, Ali was, he's always been huge, but he's like LeBron Jordan, Michael Jordan is today. People were flocking him nonstop, And Ali's
absolutely
at a different level, of course. But he actually, I left my phone number on that letter. And the next day before I went to school, he called me. Before leaving school,
phone rang,
it was Muhammad Ali. I was like, "Oh my god!" I couldn't believe it. Kids at school didn't believe me, but when Ali spoke to me, he encouraged me to box. But I was a little kid. He knew what the odds are of making it in boxing and what happened to boxers. And he stressed me on the phone. All he kept talking to me about is stay in school and have something to fall back on. Stay in school. And that's what he told me. And it stuck with me my whole career. And, I ended up going to the University of Michigan, got my degree there.
Outstanding.
Just moved on to other things after boxing. I never went back. I didn't think of going back. I was done. I was already investing in real estate prior to my retirement. I just stayed with real estate. I kind of fell into it. I got my real estate license and started doing things for other people, helping them out. And one thing led to another. I opened up my company, ARG Realty, American Realty Group. And we have a location in downtown on Woodward Avenue. And we also have a location in West Dearborn on Michigan Avenue. We focus on mainly residential and commercial as well. We're a full-service real estate company, property management, sales, leasing, and myself downtown, a lot of commercial work. People who are looking to buy commercial buildings, move their business down there, franchises moving downtown. So do a little bit of everything in real estate.
So let's talk about that briefly. I mean, first of all, before we go down that path briefly, it just shows you do not underestimate a person who's a role model. And the power of those words that Muhammad Ali had over you and how it drove you to the next level in your life. And now it's certainly, it's been transformed in your business world as well, because as you mentioned, you are currently the principal broker and president of ARG American Realty Group, and you mentioned downtown Detroit, and I think you have an office in Dearborn. And as we talk about the industry, you and I chatted briefly this past week, we were talking about how, you know, Detroit, and since we're both here in the city, is bouncing back. And there's been some discussion about the real estate market and the increase in housing values. You had an interesting take as a realtor. You had an interesting take. My question to you was, hey, do you see that as it translates into housing sales? You had an interesting response. Why don't you share that with our listeners?
Yeah, well, as we've seen, the growth downtown has been phenomenal, and it's grown at a phenomenal rate. And I think eventually real estate would have, you know, gone, you know, Detroit would have came back sooner or later, but in the time it did, because it's incredible what downtown has done in the last 7 years would normally take 20 or 25 years. But because of the growth and Dan Gilbert taking that plunge at the downtown and everyone following suit, downtown has exploded. But, you know, and the surrounding neighborhoods have, you know, also gained from that. But I will say, as I was saying to you the other day, the inner city is where it's missing, mm-hmm. The inner city neighborhoods. You know, they're not filling the growth from downtown, at least not yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to take a long time for them to fill that growth without, you know, as I pointed to you, the Detroit public school system needs to be drastically improved. Once that's improved, I think, you know, families will move to Detroit. Right now, a blue-collar family is not going to move to Detroit and send their kids to a Detroit public school.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of common sense right there.
So
until that changes, I don't see anything else.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting conversation, Tyrick, because there's been so much discussion about, you know, downtown versus the neighborhoods, and we know we won't experience that full renaissance until it really evolves itself into the downtown. I mean, I'm sorry, into the neighborhoods. And you raise a good point where, you know, people may not move into the neighborhoods, although there's been some neighborhoods people are moving into, but we're talking about citywide. And until the educational system is fixed or addressed, and I know that Dr. Vitti is trying to do some things in that space, but, you know, that's a lot of work ahead of the city in terms of fixing that educational system so that families do want to come back down, and certainly live in the neighborhoods, along with the continued focus on public safety. Those are two factors that really will drive whether or not people will continue to buy homes or, you know, buy more homes in terms of the city of Detroit.
Yeah, I agree. In inner city neighborhoods particularly, you still have so much blight as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be taken care of before any family's going to move. You know, blue-collar family from a different city, say, hey, let's move to this inner city neighborhood, and there's blight burned on homes throughout the street. That's got to change as well, and that all comes hand-in-hand, I think, with education, with the school system changing, and little by little. But, you know, the surrounding neighborhoods, of like, you know, your Indian Village, your Boston Edison's, Palmer Woods, they're seeing growth from downtown, and because a lot of the executives, but then again, those aren't really blue collar. those aren't really blue collar people living there. You know, it's more on the higher end or higher middle class, white collar people that are moving to those neighborhoods. We need people to move into the blue collar neighborhoods, and that's the inner city. And that, in order for that to happen, the school system needs to change. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, in our closing minute or so together, so the on the flip side of that, the commercial development or the commercial real estate appears to be, particularly downtown, appears to be relatively strong.
It does. It does. And we see that, you know, like I said, we got Gilbert, you got the Illiches. We have other groups doing the same thing down there. It's not just Gilbert or the Illiches. There's also the Roxbury group down there. You have Bosco down there. You have different developers who are doing all kinds of great things in downtown. And you know what? You get a lot of people who from outside, from the inner city, maybe old school mentality, and they think to themselves, so what's Dan Gilbert doing for us? You know, what are they doing for us? And they had that mentality. I'm sure you've heard that before.
Yeah. Yeah.
My answer to those people are, you know, if anything, people should be thinking Dan Gilbert, because Dan Gilbert is a businessman. He doesn't have to help anybody at the end of the day.
And he's putting his money where his mouth is.
Exactly. You know, and he's doing it to benefit his business, but he's helping downtown. He doesn't have to do that. And, you know, he's not on the government side of the city.
Well, you know, I'm up against the clock, Tyrick. So real quick, a website or contact information is for you?
Yeah, Tyrick.com.
You got it.
Tyrick.com. Commercial, residential. We do it all. I'd be more than glad to help if anybody has any. Even if somebody has just questions, real estate questions, I'll be happy to answer those questions for you.
Well, we appreciate it. Thanks. Go up, man. I appreciate you calling in and just giving your lowdown on the development here in the city of Detroit. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Mark, thank you for having me on.
My pleasure. Tyrick Salmaci, and we want you all to go out and make it a great day on the Super Bowl Sunday. Doak, what do you think?
I'm ready for some football.
You ready for some football last time?
Yeah, exactly. All right. One more time.
All right. So we want you all to enjoy your Sunday, enjoy your Super Bowl Sunday, and we will check you out next week on Small Talk with Mark Eskey, brought to you by Domino's.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.